keep our mouths shut, said Jacqueline, snorting. Think we came down with the last spatter of rain, do you?
And on that trenchant note, she and Ricard walked back into the sick house. Anakin looked at Obi-Wan.
I can do this. You should...
I'm fine, said Obi-Wan, and headed for the charter house.
Stang.
Frustrated, Anakin stared after him.
Fine? You stubborn barb, you're almost out on your feet. How crazy are you, healing people who are three-quarters dead? That's something I'd do. You're supposed to be the sensible one, remember?
With a resigned shake of his head, he jogged to catch up. I suspect we'll need to dismantle both our lightsabers for this to work, said Obi-Wan as they entered the empty building. There's a chance the Theta Storm will interfere with all outgoing comm signals.
A chance?
He scoffed. The way our luck's running, you can bet on it, Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan smiled briefly.
Yes, well, under the circumstances, I think I'd rather save my credits.
But their luck wasn't all bad. The difficulties with the power grid hadn't affected the lights or the hub. After checking that the equipment was still operational, they got to work, stripping the diatium cells from their lightsabers, then wiring them up to the hub's existing inadequate power supply. With that done, and facing no immediate circuitry meltdown, Anakin connected the scrambler chip and Obi-Wan kicked the hub into life.
Well, he said after a tense moment, it didn't explode. So far, so good.
Anakin grinned. Hold that thought. How's the signal strength looking?
Still weak, said Obi-Wan, slipping the hub back to standby mode and reading off the gauge. The storm and the shield really aren't helping.
He pinched the bridge of his nose hard, eyes screwed shut.
I don't know, Anakin. This is a very long shot.
Was that Obi-Wan sounding defeated?
He never sounded defeated. He never gave up. No matter how bad things got, he stuck by his golden rule. A solution to the problem will always present itself.
Anakin shrugged. Better than no shot at all, he said, deliberately indifferent.
Come on, Obi-Wan, snap out of it, he thought,
then said, Master Banyara will have the temple listening for us. If anyone can pick up a signal, he can.
True.
Cross-legged on the floor, Obi-Wan shook himself.
All right, then. Here goes nothing. May the Force be with us.
He switched the hub from standby to active. It buzzed loudly, vibrations thrumming it as the power boost from the diatium cells surged through its rejiggered circuitry. Something sizzled, and the air turned briefly acrid. One by one, reluctantly, the comm signal board lit green.
Now, Obi-Wan, Anakin said. I don't know how much longer this is going to hold.
Obi-Wan keyed in the coded temple frequency, waited for the scrambler chip to come online, then toggled the transmit switch and waited again for the hub to confirm connection to the HoloNet comm relay network. Nothing. Anakin felt the first beads of sweat start to trickle down his spine.
Stang, the hub unit was so slow.
Must be 20 years out of date at least.
Come on.
The last indicator light turned green. They heard a buzzing hum and a crackle of static. Obi-Wan closed his eyes and ran a hand over his face. And then he leaned close to the hub mic, his expression intent and urgent.
This is Obi-Wan Kenobi for Master Yoda. Repeat, this is Obi-Wan Kenobi for Master Yoda. Priority Alpha, can you respond?
The security comms beeping dragged Bail Organa out of his shallow toss-and-turn sleep. Barely rested, his head still aching despite the blocker he'd taken before falling into bed what felt like only 5 minutes ago, he opened his eyes.
Lights.
Slowly, the chamber lifted out of shadow. The security comm beat steadily, its red warning lights flashing on the nightstand beside him.
Stang. This had better be good.
Organa.
This is Master Banyaro at the Jedi Temple, Senator. Master Yoda requests your immediate presence in the communications center.
Bail sat up, his heart racing.
I'm on my way.
Some 30 standard minutes later, he was crowded into a secure comms booth with Yoda and the temple's impressive communications chief, listening to an almost inaudible message from Obi-Wan. I didn't catch all of that, he said, once the recording had run its course. Can I hear it again? Yoda nodded at Banyaro. The Jedi tapped a switch on the comm deck, and a moment later the faint, static-scratched message replayed.
Both still alive. We're trapped by a theta storm in an outlying village. Master Yoda, we were unable to extract Dr. Fernan. Production of the weapon continues on a major scale. Recommend you launch an immediate assault to take the planet. When the storm breaks, we'll return to the city and make another attempt to stop Dird. If we can...
And there the message ended, swallowed by static. Bail sat back in his chair. Thank you. Looking at Yoda, he wondered if the ancient Jedi felt as sick with relief as he did himself. So what now?
We wait,
said Yoda, standing supported by his gimmer stick. For how long? He demanded. I think it's fair to say the Republic's in graver danger now than it was the day Obi-Wan and Anakin left for Lanteeb. We have to rethink our strategy, Master Yoda. Obi-Wan's right. We need to get control of that planet. Yoda's ears flattened.
Still working to create an antidote, your scientist friend is, Senator,
he pointed out.
Until a countermeasure against this bioweapon we have, public knowledge of the Separatist plans we must avoid. Panic will that cause. Great devastation.
I agree, he said. The public can't know, but since when do we brief the public on our fleet deployments? Nobody needs to know where the battle group's going. Yoda just looked at him.
A secret you think this business will remain, once GAR Fleet Command is told?
With Separatist spies still in their midst? No, he's right, but... Then we have to take this to Palpatine. If Dird is really stockpiling the bioweapon, it seems likely an attack on the Republic is imminent. As head of the Security Committee, I can no longer support keeping the Supreme Chancellor in the dark. Yoda's ears flattened further.
Agree with you, I do, Senator. Reluctantly. To Palpatine, we will go.
You mean now?
Yes, now,
said Yoda.
Master Banyaro, every temple resource you will direct to listening for Master Kenobi's next message.
Yes, Master, said the communications chief, bowing.
Yoda held out his hand.
A secure comlink, if you please.
Banyaro handed him one, and Yoda placed a comm to Palpatine's private residence, arranging for an immediate meeting. Then he handed back the comlink and turned.
Senator?
Standing, Bail offered the comm chief a nod.
My thanks, Master Banyaro. Without your expertise and diligence, we might be in even worse straits.
It wasn't until he and Yoda were in his speeder, racing along a priority traffic lane with the temple a distance behind them, that the ancient Jedi Master spoke again.
Ask you, I must, Senator, to let me direct this conversation with the Supreme Chancellor.
Bail gave Yoda a sidelong look. Any particular reason why? Given I'm one of Palpatine's most trusted security advisors, he's going to want to hear from me. And if I might be blunt, I can't afford to have my priorities questioned. It might be convenient to some that I enjoy a good relationship with the Jedi, but I must be seen as a senator serving the Republic first and foremost.
Know that I do,
said Yoda, slumped and brooding in the speeder's front passenger seat.
Yet ask for your reticence, I must. A delicate situation this is, hmm?
Please, Master Yoda, continue, Bail said as Yoda frowned at Coruscant's scintillating nighttime light show. Whatever you tell me won't be repeated. Yoda's lips twitched.
Not even to Obi-Wan?
Not if you tell me to forget what I hear.
Senator.
Yoda looked at him, his eyes grim.
Forget what you hear.
Oh, mercy. Done.
A keen interest does Palpatine take in Jedi business, Senator,
Yoda said.
Deflect his questions, I can. Reveal more than you intend, or I might like you could, if freely you speak with him, hmm?
I see, he said slowly. Obi-Wan's never hidden his disdain for politics and politicians, but I never realized the attitude went so high in the Order, or that they regarded Palpatine so warily.
Angry Palpatine will be when learn of the Lanteeb mission he does,
Yoda added.
Better it is that his anger toward me is directed. Impervious to it I am. Harmed by his temper, I cannot be.
whereas I serve at the Supreme Chancellor's pleasure.
A good man you are, Bail Organa,
Yoda said quietly.
A great debt do we owe you. A poor friend would I be if damage to your career I allowed because of choices I made.
Bail had to clear his throat. Master Yoda, you owe me nothing. Sighing, Yoda shook his head.
Wrong about that you are, Senator. Obi-Wan's life do I owe you.
Obi-Wan, my own life's not so cluttered with friends that I can afford to lose one, he thought. Will he and Anakin be all right, Master? Will we get them back?
No, that I do not,
said Yoda, as though the words were deeply painful.
Pray for them you could, if prayer your custom is.
Well, it was honored more in the breach than the practice, but I'll say every prayer I know, Master. I'll even make up a few if that'll help. Yoda nodded.
It would.
Bail shifted them out of their government priority traffic lane into the slipstream that would take them to the ultra-high security residential sector housing Palpatine's apartment. Then, he considered Yoda again. You know what you'll be risking if you delay an assault on Lantib. Another nod.
Yes, Senator, I know.
And if the worst happens? Yoda didn't answer, and Bail didn't push. Stang. They'd almost reached their destination. Even though he was Bail Organa, with Master Yoda as his passenger, even though his speeder was equipped with security clearance beacons, tags, markers, and chips, still they were escorted the remainder of the journey by four heavily armed and armored Senate Personal Guard speeders. Once docked inside the fortified private residence's secure lockup facility, they were ordered from their own speeder, triple-scanned, retina-checked, then taken by a team of Senate commandos to a dedicated armor swift tube that whisked them to the penthouse suite where Palpatine was waiting. Clad head to toe in plain, unrelieved black, odd to see after his ceremonial Senate garb, the Republic's Supreme Chancellor dismissed their escort. Well, he said once they were alone, why do I have the feeling you're not bringing me good news? Bail took a step forward. I hope you'll forgive the intrusion, Supreme Chancellor. Unfortunately, it was necessary. There are developments of which you must be made aware that couldn't wait till morning. Palpatine's hair glowed silver in his foyer's warm and welcoming light. Yes, he drawled. I'd gathered that much. Very well then, Senator, Master Yoda. If the galaxy as we know it is about to end, I fail to see why we can't discuss the matter in comfort. Come this way. As Palpatine turned to lead them into his apartment proper, Bail glanced down at Yoda. Over to you. Yoda nodded, his eyes bleak, and together they followed in the Supreme Chancellor's chilly wake. Chapter 11. Only his brutally rigorous self-discipline, the discipline of the greatest Sith Lord ever to live, saved Sidious from revealing the depth of his fury as Yoda explained the mission to Lantib.
Dooku, you have failed me again.
Master Yoda, he said ruthlessly unemotional, I must confess to feeling perturbed. Why did you not tell me of this bioweapon when you first learned of the threat? He shifted his gaze to the man standing beside his implacable enemy. And you, Senator Organa, as one of my most trusted security advisors, how could you not?
Upon me the blame falls for this, Supreme Chancellor,
said Yoda.
Persuaded by me, Senator Organa was, to keep this matter secret. Defer to my judgment as a Jedi, he did.
Sidious pushed to his feet and indulged himself in a temper-driven pacing back and forth before the vista window in his apartment's lounge.
Master Yoda, you must know in what esteem I hold both you and your order. Therefore, you must also know that what I say to you now I do not say lightly.
He whirled, stabbing the hated Jedi with his most steely stare.
How dare you? I am the Supreme Chancellor of this Republic, responsible for the welfare of its quadrillions of citizens. Who anointed you the gatekeeper of knowledge? Who appointed you my guardian that you would decide what I should and should not be told of what goes on within our borders? I am the people's elected representative, not you. How could you betray my trust in this fashion?
Slumped over his gimmer stick, Yoda bowed his head.
Unknown, at first, was the extent of this problem.
Then he looked up.
And inform you of every Jedi mission, I do not, Supreme Chancellor.
Sidious stopped pacing and clasped his hands behind his back.
Then perhaps you should, he said coldly. But we can discuss that later. What I will say now is that when the extent of the problem was revealed, you should have informed me. Because then I could have had Dooku take steps, and now it's too late. Now I must find a way to salvage this situation.
Organa, that meddler, cleared his throat. Master Yoda thought, and I agreed, that if we could deal with the threat quickly and discreetly, we'd avoid yet another blow to the public's confidence. It was never about usurping your authority, Supreme Chancellor.
Perhaps, perhaps not, Sidious thought. But usurp it you did, you insignificant little princeling, and there will be a reckoning for that.
He kept his voice cold.
Even so, Senator.
Chastened, Organa bowed his head. Yoda, not chastened at all, the loathsome troll, met his hostile stare without flinching.
Hopeful I was that Master Kenobi and young Skywalker successful would be in thwarting Lock Durd's plan. Hopeful I am that succeed they still might.
Anakin.
He felt an uneasy ripple in the Force. His apprentice in waiting was threatened. He could feel it. The future he had foreseen remained unaltered. The time was swift, approaching when Anakin would become his strong right hand. But that did not mean the boy could never come to harm. His encounter with Dooku had made that quite plain.
Be strong, Anakin. Be bold and resolute. I cannot openly aid you yet, but from the shadows I shall protect you as best I can. I will make no bones about it, he said austerely. You have both disappointed me and shown a distressing lack of judgment. I expect much better from both of you.
Giving them a moment to ponder that rebuke, he resumed his seat, left them standing like petitioners, like subjects.
I have no doubt you believed you were acting in my best interests and the best interests of our Republic, he said. That much at least does you credit. But let me make myself abundantly clear. I am in no need of your protection. Is that understood?
Supreme Chancellor, Organa murmured, his gaze still downcast.
Understood it is, said Yoda, outwardly meek.
The Jedi's true feelings were unreadable.
Supreme Chancellor.
Then we shall not speak of this again, he said, grandly magnanimous. Instead, Master Yoda, tell me how you suggest we proceed. You say Master Kenobi requests an all-out assault on this planet Lanteeb. Do you concur with his assessment? I was under the impression that our deployment capabilities remain woefully compromised.
And now Yoda could not so perfectly contain his emotions. They colored the Force with delectable doubt.
True, it is that trouble the communication sabotage still causes our fleet.
Not to mention those cruisers still in dry dock undergoing repairs from your encounter at Kothless, he added. So my question remains, is a full-scale attempt to retake Lanteeb even feasible?
We may have no choice, said Organa. Durd's bioweapon has the potential to turn the tide of this war.
Yes, I know. That was the whole point, he thought. What of Master Kenobi and young Anakin? Can they thwart this appalling Nymoidian before we're forced to launch a planetary assault?
Sidious shook his head.
You say you're hopeful, Master Yoda. Can you give me more hope than that?
No, said Yoda. In flux, this situation is, Supreme Chancellor. Further meditate upon it, I must.
I see. Senator Organa?
Organa could hide nothing from him. He felt the man's sickening doubt, his growing alarm, the fear for his Jedi friend. There was also guilt for having held his tongue so long. Such a maelstrom of emotion was highly entertaining and useful in keeping the senator off balance and less effective in his work.
Twice now Organa's instincts have interfered with my plans. I shall have to keep a closer eye on this man.
Delaying an assault on Lanteeb is risky, Organa said slowly. If we're caught off guard and Dooku launches a bioweapon attack, I don't want to think about the consequences, Supreme Chancellor.
He pretended to ponder that deeply.
I agree, Senator. Any delay in apprehending this criminal Locke Dird and dismantling his weapons production facility could lead to a catastrophic separatist attack. But, and herein lies our dilemma, there is also significant risk in acting. Should word of this terrible new weapon get out, countless systems would be thrown into panic. It's possible we'd see mass defections from the Republic to the Separatists in an effort to appease Count Dooku and his thuggish allies. And what of our current military engagements? If we redeploy the few functional cruisers we have, then we abandon helpless civilians to Separatist predations. And won't that damage faith in the Jedi and this government at a time when that faith is being sorely tested?
How then do you suggest we proceed, Supreme Chancellor?
Said Yoda.
Which risk is least risky, do you say,
Both choices are unpalatable, Master Yoda, he replied.
Again, he pretended to consider their options.
If we were not talking of Master Kenobi and young Anakin, I believe I would authorize an immediate assault on Lanteeb. But we are talking of those two particular Jedi, and the three of us know what they're capable of. Especially when their backs are pressed hard to the wall.
Organa stared at him.
Are you sure? They're just two men trapped on a hostile planet with no backup, no reliable communications, and only a lightsaber each. And they're facing unlimited firepower from a droid army. Not two men, Senator, he said gently. Two Jedi. Those two Jedi. And yes, that's the gamble I wish to take. I have absolute faith in them. I'd give my life into their keeping without a second thought. Wouldn't you?
Of course I would, said Organa. But we're not risking ourselves. We're risking the lives of those entrusted to our care.
Supreme Chancellor,
Sidious stood.
Your point is taken, Senator. Alas, no matter what choice we make, countless thousands of lives are in danger.
True, that is. Said Yoda heavily. And agree with your caution, I do, Supreme Chancellor.
So you share my faith in Master Kenobi and Anakin? He said. You believe they can save us again?
Yoda remained silent for some time, his eyes half-lidded.
Believe I do that more time they should be given, he said at last. Unclear to us the situation on Lanteeb is.
But Master Yoda, it's not unclear to them. Organa protested. And they've asked that we act.
Sidious raised a warning hand.
And act we will, Senator. But first, I believe we should give our Jedi friends the chance to complete their mission. If we can somehow succeed in thwarting this Separatist plot without further alarming the public or redeploying our already overtaxed GAR forces, then I would consider ourselves triply blessed.
Swallowing emotion, Organa nodded. Obviously, Supreme Chancellor, the final decision is yours.
I fear it must be, he said. I wish I could put this matter before the entire Senate, my friends. I wish I could lift some of this burden from your shoulders. But if this terrible war has taught me nothing else, it has taught me that above all things, circumspection is paramount. There are wheels within wheels, endlessly spinning. To win, we must, as the saying goes, play our cards very close to our chests. But,
again he lifted his hand and let a whisper of censure creep back into his voice,
never so close that I cannot see them. I trust I won't need to remind you of that again.
No, Supreme Chancellor, said Organa, so pleasingly contrite. You won't. Thank you.
Master Yoda?
Tell you I will, Chancellor, the moment contact we again make with Kenobi and Skywalker,
said the old Jedi fool.
If successful they are, no action will we need to take. But if fail to stop Lockdur, they should. Then an attack upon Lanteeb we must launch.
Agreed, Sidious said. And in the meantime, what can be done to aid the work of this scientist?
Nothing, Supreme Chancellor, said Organa. Dr. Netzel has everything he requires, and he's a genius. He will come up with an answer to the bioweapon.
I hope you're right, Senator, he said, frowning. For all our sakes. Keep me apprised of every development, no matter how trivial.
And that was their dismissal. As soon as they'd been escorted from his apartment, he tried to make contact with his apprentice, but Dooku did not answer the summons. Even as he raged, he realized it was not likely an insolent defiance. It just felt like one, coming on the heels of these most recent revelations. He left his signature on his apprentice's comm station and withdrew to meditate upon Anakin and his current plight. Dooku would return the comm as soon as he saw his master's mark.
At which time he will feel my wrath. For I have not labored these many long years to have my plans disrupted by a weak corruptible like him.
The first tinges of dawn were touching Coruscant's night sky as Bail navigated his speeder back to the Jedi Temple. He waited for Yoda to say something, but the Jedi Master remained silent, almost withdrawn. Finally, with the temple looming large before them, he cleared his throat.
I think Palpatine had a right to be angry, Master Yoda. Ultimately, the safety of the Republic is his responsibility.
Yoda glanced at him.
No, Senator. In all our hands does the safety of this Republic lie. To give away personal responsibility is to make freedom a hostage, hmm? Protect the Republic we all must with every decision we make.
A longer, sideways measuring look.
When began, this did. Agree not to tell Palpatine of your suspicions. You did.
Trust Yoda to bring that up, he thought, then said,
Yes, because that's all they were then, suspicions. And with our ongoing security issues, I felt that such extreme caution was warranted.
But we've gone way past suspicions, Master Yoda.
He eased back on the speeder's control yoke, preparing to slip into the dedicated temple traffic lane.
If I might ask, were you ever intending to tell him?
I was,
said Yoda, as they smoothly switched slipstreams.
When successfully completed, the mission was.
He has so much faith in them, Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Bail shook his head. I think it scares me a little. Not because I don't believe they're brilliant, I do. It's just...
The Jedi are not creatures of myth and magic,
said Yoda. He almost sounded sad.
They are flesh and blood. They bleed. They break. Too much you fear we ask of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker.
Yes, I do. He looked at Yoda. Don't you?
Yoda answered with silence.
Well, that's reassuring.
After returning the Jedi Master to the temple, Bail made his way to Padme's apartment. He desperately wanted to see Trin, find out how close his sequestered friend was to a breakthrough on the antidote, but it was too early. Really, it was too early to see Padme, but she'd never forgive him for holding back his news of Obi-Wan and Anakin. Well, of Anakin in particular. He was almost convinced now that if her interest lay anywhere, it was with the younger man.
And if that doesn't stir up a nest of Gundarks, I don't know what will. Oh, Padme.
To his surprise, he found her already awake, dressed in a forest green bodysuit and throwing clothes into a suitcase. She was distinctly unamused.
I'm sorry, Bail, she said as he halted in her bedroom doorway. I'm abandoning you with the most awful schedule of meetings I know, but the Queen has made it abundantly clear that if I don't fix this mess with the Artisans Guild, there are going to be interplanetary repercussions.
What?
He crossed the chamber's threshold and stood at the foot of the bed. I thought you said you'd resolve that dispute.
I did resolve that dispute, she retorted, snatching a pair of shoes from her wardrobe. But now it's back to being unresolved.
She threw the shoes into her suitcase.
I swear the next Barv who tells me he's got an artistic temperament and can't be expected to observe the civilities is going to find himself...
With an enormous effort, she discarded the rest of the threat, exhaled a deep breath, and dropped to the edge of the bed. Even at this early hour, and so angry, she looked immaculately beautiful as usual. Casting him a rueful glance, she shook her head.
I'm sorry. You've caught me in a very bad moment.
No need to apologize, he said, trying to smile. Sometimes being a senator is like being nibbled to death by Tartarian mice.
True, she said. In fact, I...
And then she seemed to register that he was standing in her bedroom.
Bale, it's the crack of dawn. What are you...
Then she realized what it had to be.
They're in trouble. How bad is it? Have they been... Are they...
Not dead, he said quickly. Not hurt, I don't think, anyway. Just trapped.
On Lanteeb?
He nodded. They're still trying to stop Dird.
And then what?
Her voice was faint, all her passionate energy smothered by fear.
How are they going to get off that planet?
I don't know.
Jedi won't rescue them?
Padme, I don't know. Leaping up, she began an agitated pacing.
They rode to the rescue on Geonosis. They have to. They can't just...
Her face hardened.
Well, if the Jedi Council won't help them, I will, because I am not going to leave them stranded there.
She whirled around, her gaze hot on him.
And you'll help, because you got them into this, Bale. You sent them on this wild bantha chase to Lanteeb, and just because it turns out you were right and there was trouble brewing there, that is no excuse for you to... Padme! Padme, cool your thrusters!
He said, holding out both hands. You can't go charging in like a random blaster bolt. The situation is unbelievably volatile. One wrong move and we could get them killed. Is that what you want?
Of course not, she snapped. What I want is them home again on Coruscant, safe and sound. What I want is...
She turned her back to him, her shoulders shaking, as though she were weeping or trying very hard not to.
Stang.
Padme, he said carefully. Talk to me. Whatever's wrong, if it's a secret, it'll stay that way. Please let me help. He didn't dare say anything more. The truth had to come from her. No matter what he suspected, she had to be the one to cross that line. For the longest time, she didn't speak. Then, at last, she turned. Her eyes were dry, her face composed and self-contained. She wasn't smiling, but there was a warmth in the steady look she gave him.
You are so sweet to care, Bale, thank you,
she said, her voice low and steady.
And I hate to be churlish, but I need to finish packing and be on my way to the spaceport.
Given everything our poor Republic's enduring at the moment, I realize the temperamental tantrums of a bunch of glassblowers must sound trivial, even petty. But Naboo prizes its artisans, and Queen Jamilia is relying on me to resolve what is, to them, a genuine crisis. In other words, Bale, mind your own business, he thought. Then he nodded. Where is it you're going?
Bonadan,
she said, turning back to the suitcase.
The Queen's sure we can break the current deadlock if I can convince the Silver Sand Consortium board members to sit down with me and discuss the glassblowers' concerns.
He had to grin. I take it the glassblowers themselves haven't been invited to the meeting?
I'm told, said Padme, very restrained, that thanks to their last temper tantrum, if even one glassblower is found within 50 parsecs of Bonadan IV, the Silver Sand Consortium will pass legislation banning all sales of silica to Naboo in perpetuity.
That must have been some tantrum.
Queen Jamilia is surprised we didn't hear it in the Senate chamber.
With a sigh, Padme closed the suitcase and clicked shut its latches. Then her lips tightened, and she stepped back from the bed.
I'll have my secured private comlink with me, of course, she added, not looking at him. If you get word, I don't care what time it is. Would you...
You know I will, he said. Whatever I hear, whenever I hear it, I'll calm you straight away, I promise.
Thank you. I... Her lips tightened again, and suddenly it seemed she was once more on the verge of tears. If he took a step toward her, if he touched her or offered any kind of sympathy, she'd break, and she wouldn't like him for it.
"I'll be on my way, then,"
he said with a kind of forced cheer that made him feel slightly ill. "If the nibbling gets too much and you need to have a temper tantrum of your own, you know where to find me."
"Yes, I do," she said softly. "Thank you, Bale."
Padme's fussy protocol droid insisted on seeing him to the apartment's front door. As it activated the latch and stood back perfectly deferential, he went to leave, then hesitated. Turning, he stared into its glowing photoreceptors, feeling foolish. The thing was a droid. It wasn't alive, and yet...
"If you think she's in trouble, C-3PO, you calm me," he said, keeping his voice down. "Day or night, you understand?"
The droid stared at him blankly. But was it also judging him? Measuring him? Deciding if it could trust him?
"Stang, it's a droid."
At last, the machine nodded.
"Senator?"
So was that a yes or a no? He couldn't tell, and he wasn't about to ask. He'd just have to wait and see. But as he navigated the traffic streams to his own apartment, only vaguely aware of yet another glorious Coruscant sunrise, he found himself praying hard it was a yes, and praying even harder that somehow the two impossible friends he and Padme had in common would manage to find a way out of their latest predicament, because he did not want to think about having to give her bad news.
"Oh, Padme, dear Padme, it's such a big galaxy. Was there nobody else you could fall in love with?"
It took Dooku nearly 2 hours to make contact from Umgul. Waiting for him, Sidious ordered Mos Amita to rearrange Palpatine's schedule. As a rule, he was in his Senate executive suite no later than 07:30 every morning, an example of diligence too few senators could bring themselves to emulate. They thought he didn't notice. Of course, they thought wrong. While he waited for Dooku's comm, he sank himself deep within the ebb and flow of the dark side to explore its possibilities and search for the most advantageous way to exploit what had happened. Setbacks were inevitable. What counted was how one dealt with them. Over the years, he'd become an expert in transforming defeat into victory, in turning a retreat into an advance from a different direction. He had no doubt he could turn Dooku's failure with Lanteeb into some kind of advantage. In the long view, of course, it would make no difference. He was destined to rule an empire, and no Jedi could change that.
"But I must have a care for Anakin, which means that far from being trapped on that insignificant planet, he must be afforded every chance to escape. The question is, how best can I achieve that?"
Sinking deeper again, he invited the dark side to show him. When Dooku's comm finally came through, he had his plan, and knew with a fat and scintillating satisfaction that yet again events would dance to his tune. Clad in his Sith robes, he activated the holo-imager in his penthouse apartment's secure, soundproofed study.
"You failed to persuade the Umgul government to join your alliance," he said, ignoring Dooku's cautious greeting. "I find that disappointing, Lord Tyrannus."
So far away, and he could still sense Dooku's stabbing fright.
"You know? But I have only just returned from..."
He cracked the dark side like a whip.
"Did you think I would not know?"
Dooku dropped to one elderly knee.
"Lord Sidious, they were not amenable to persuasion."
"You should have made them amenable."
"My lord, I did not dare. Our meeting was live recorded, tight-beaming to a number of different locations. There were numerous witnesses. Under the circumstances, I felt it better to admit defeat."
"I don't recall teaching you that the Sith admit defeat, Lord Tyrannus."
"Only temporarily, my lord,"
Dooku said, shuddering.
I thought to let the Umgul government believe it was free to make its own choice, and then, once our enemies believe they have no more to fear, I will arrange matters so that Umgul comes to us begging for protection.
Ah, so there was life in the old man yet.
That might be an acceptable alternative, Lord Tyrannus, he said after stretching his silence almost to Dooku's breaking point. Provided it can be brought to pass.
Dooku bowed low.
My lord, you have my word it will be.
See that you keep that promise, Tyrannus, he said coldly. My generous forgiveness is not without limits.
He waved a dismissive hand.
And so much for Umgul. Now, what of Lanteeb?
My lord?
Dooku lifted his head.
I have no news to report of that matter.
Because you have failed me there too, Tyrannus, he snarled. The Jedi know all. Kenobi and Skywalker even now are on the planet seeking to destroy Lok-Durd and his weapon. They have been assisted by the scientist our Nymoidian pawn took for his purposes. The Jedi have rescued the hostages Durd was holding against her, and one of the greatest scientific minds in the Republic is now working on an antidote against the weapon. It seems, Lord Tyrannus, that the situation on Lanteeb has entirely escaped your control. Must I forgive you again, my apprentice?
Dooku's horrified shock was genuine. So at least, unlike Yoda, he hadn't been keeping unfortunate secrets.
Lord Sidious.
The tremble in the old man's voice was pure fear.
I have no excuse to give you.
No, you do not, he replied, silky with menace. And wise it is of you, Tyrannus, to attempt no self-defense. But I will forgive this lapse, provided you can snatch me a victory from this imminent defeat. I strongly suggest that you take the Nymoidian to task.
Do you wish him to survive, my lord?
Yes, he said. But he need not know his life is not forfeit. Not at first. General Durd needs a sharp reminder of his place, a defining encounter with fear.
My lord, he shall have it,
said Dooku, and the dark side trembled.
But what of Kenobi and Skywalker? Surely we must capture them, or better yet, kill them.
And here was the sticking point. For while he had to protect Anakin, Dooku could never suspect that he himself was merely a placeholder, a useful lackey and nothing more.
If I could afford to dispatch you to Lanteeb, Tyrannus, I would. But I am relying on you to keep the other Separatist leaders in line. I am particularly perturbed by those scum in the banking clan. Grubby merchants, the lot of them. And not to be trusted out of your sight. My instincts tell me they are about to attempt a secret deal with the Trade Federation. You must see that poisonous bloom nipped in the bud, Tyrannus. Have no fear. The dark side shall account for Kenobi and Skywalker in due course.
My lord.
Dooku's chin tucked tight to his chest.
You are far more magnanimous than I deserve. You will not be disappointed again. I swear it.
Time to sweeten the old man with a tiny drop of honey. Dooku had his pride, after all, and though his bones were soaked in the dark side, still no need to tempt fate.
Tyrannus, much is asked of you in this great endeavor. Your burdens are heavy, my expectations high. I trust you will redeem yourself.
Dooku's relief was as resounding as his fear.
My lord, I will. Your trust is not misplaced. I swear it.
Pleased, Sidious dismissed his apprentice. Then he returned his black robe to its rightful place, donned Palpatine's richly sober garb, and became, once again, the Republic's revered and humble Supreme Chancellor. And smiled all the way to the Senate. Lok-Durd prowled his new compound's production facility, so gleeful he could almost forget his recent fears and trepidations.
The scientist was performing well past his expectations. With the last kink in her formula taken care of, the first shipments of raw damatite delivered, tested, and approved, and his droid workforce slaving without pause to convert the damatite and rondium mixture to pure poison, he was at last able to bask in the glow of a job well done. Especially since, within a matter of hours, those meddlesome Jedi would finally be dead, and with them, the chance of his near-disastrous mistake being discovered. Smiling, he watched the droids as they sealed another batch of bioweapon into small, secure canisters. Each dose was enough to wipe out a 3-square-click section of city. On some planets, that would mean the entire city. On others, like Coruscant, Corellia, Alderaan, and the like, multiple strikes would be required to wipe out a population, or at least enough of a population to guarantee a recalcitrant government's attention.
Really, I am so very good at what I do.
By his estimation, he needed 2 more standard weeks of production and 1 more shipment of the raw damatite, which was due shortly. Then, he could contact Count Dooku with the good news that their next devastating offensive against the Republic could begin. And this time, there would be no Jedi interference. This time, the Jedi would be forced to stand impotently by as millions were slaughtered.
I wonder if I can convince the Count to target the Jedi Temple itself. Wouldn't that be a glorious retribution?
His personal comlink buzzed. Irritated, he pulled it from his tunic pocket.
What?
You have a priority incoming call, General.
And that was Barov, the criffing barv. Ever since his precious Drevok sniffer had found the Jedi, he'd been insupportable, overbearing, smug, arrogant, and presumptuous. It was time to discredit and discard him.
When I tell Dooku that the bioweapon is ready for deployment, I shall be in a position to demand certain recognitions for my service. Losing Barov will be but the first, but none that come after will taste as sweet.
Durd glared at the comlink.
Yes, and?
It's the Count. He seems unhappy.
And just like that, his triumphant mood collapsed.
What do you mean, unhappy?
He demanded.
What have you told him, Colonel? Have you been speaking out of turn?
To what good purpose, General? Our fates are tied, are they not? If one of us stumbles, we both stumble. I've no idea what he wants.
I'm coming now, he snapped. Tell the Count I shall join him in a few moments.
Durd took the communication in his office, with the door firmly shut. Making sure his demeanor was suitably restrained, he flicked on his holo display unit and waited for Dooku's holo image to appear. When it did, the Count's expression was discouraging.
Do I strike you as a fool, General Durd?
A fool? No, no, my lord. You are the wisest man of my acquaintance.
Then it is you who are the fool. Did you think I would not learn the truth?
Durd felt his stomachs roll.
The truth, my lord?
About the Jedi, about the hostages. Have you told me nothing but lies?
The shock was so great, he nearly fell to the floor.
My lord Count? My lord Count?
Hold your flapping Nymoidian tongue, or I swear I will have it ripped out.
Durd nodded mutely as greasy sweat slicked the skin beneath his suddenly over-thick tunic.
Have you lied about the weapon, Durd?
No, no, my lord, I have not. I have the weapon. I've just come from inspecting it. Our stockpile is growing by the hour. I swear it.
He was babbling. He could hear himself babbling, but he couldn't stop.
Dooku's eyes, he's going to kill me. As soon as I'm useless to him, I'll be dead. I will send you some. Shall I send you some?
Dooku ignored him.
There is a scientist on Coruscant even now creating an antidote for the weapon.
My Lord Count, you must be misinformed, he said faintly. No antidote is possible. If you believe nothing else I say, I beg you to believe that.
Silence, as Dooku's terrible eyes bored into him.
I do. As for the rest, There will be a reckoning, Dird. Soon. For now, you will concentrate on producing my weapon, and you'll hold yourself in readiness for my retribution.
Dooku's holo image vanished as the link was cut. Dird stood behind his desk and gasped for air.
No, no, no! This cannot be! I will not let this be!
He bellowed for Barev. Moments later, the office door flew open.
General?
The colonel stared about, blaster drawn.
Are you under attack?
The fool. The stinking human fool. You have to stop the droid army heading for Torbel. It must be reprogrammed. I want the Jedi taken alive.
Slowly, Barev lowered the blaster.
Alive?
Yes, you incompetent moron! Alive!
He shouted.
Dooku knows! Do you hear me? He knows! And we will be dead unless we can appease his wrath! I wanted the Jedi alive, to give him as a gift. The droids must be programmed with the Jedi's holo images, so they know who not to kill. And I want...
He beat his fists against his chest as though that could force the words from his body.
I want to show Count Dooku my value! I want to prove my weapon to him!
You want to test it now?
Said Barev, surprised.
Are you sure? Do you have permission?
This is my project, he spat. I do not need permission. I will choose a target in the heart of the Republic, and you will see that our demonstration is executed perfectly. Everything is in place to launch an attack, isn't it? Or have I been deceived in that, too?
Barev wasn't really a moron. He knew perfectly well his own life was on the line.
No, General, you're not deceived. Give the word and an attack will be launched.
Then why are you still standing there?
Dird demanded, close to screaming.
First the droids and then the attack! Get out! Get out! There's no time to lose!
Chapter 12 Obi-Wan. Anakin's voice and a touch to his shoulder brought him from meditation into full awareness. Obi-Wan opened his eyes and looked up. Another problem? On the contrary, said Anakin. Though clearly tired, he was smiling. Ricard says the Theta emissions are falling at last. The storm's passing. An oddly watery daylight poured in through the charter house's open doors and unshuttered windows. The cool air still reeked of smoke and scorched metals, but it smelled of freshly cooked food, too. And there were voices, blended into an indistinct hubbub. In the Force, he sensed lingering anxiety, but no more overwhelming fear. That is good news. Cross-legged on the floor, his back braced against the wall, Obi-Wan eased his shoulders and looked at the burnt-out communications hub. Any luck? Anakin's smile vanished. No, it's fried. There's no chance of getting it operational again. And our scrambler chip? Is completely scrambled. Anakin fished in his filthy trouser pocket and pulled out a sad little lump of circuitry that had melted, then hardened. He held it out. Which is going to make things interesting. Inspecting the ruined chip, he pulled a face. More interesting, you mean? Anakin shrugged. Everyone knows a quiet life is a boring life. Our only consolation is the diatium cells weren't damaged. He patted his shirt's shielded pocket. I've put my lightsaber back together. Nodding, he tossed the ruined chip aside. Good. I'll get on to mine in a moment. No need, said Anakin, pleased with himself. Here you go. Obi-Wan plucked his lightsaber from the air. Thank you. You're welcome. Oh, and if you're hungry... Anakin jerked a thumb behind him. There's a kind of communal breakfast happening out on the square. He was famished, but... I'll eat once I've looked in on Tiba Sufi's patients. Have you had something? Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Another swift smile. Mind you, I made sure to steer clear of Tiba Jacqueline's eggs. He really wasn't in the mood for jokes. And the villagers? How are they? Subdued, said Anakin, sobering. They know how close they came to destruction last night, and now, with the refinery blown to bits, they know they're still in trouble. His lips tightened. I meant what I said, Obi-Wan, about getting them help. I know you did. he said gently, because they were both tired. And we will. But for now, we must remain focused on the mission.
Speaking of the mission, said Anakin, when do you want to tell Jacqueline we're leaving?
He hesitated. Oh, yes, about that.
What?
Anakin stared.
You want to wait for the convoy after all?
Obi-Wan.
I know, he said as Anakin turned away in frustration. But the fact is, nothing's changed about the challenges we face in returning to Lantiba. Traveling out in the open, in broad daylight, unprotected, with our false ID chips useless.
He shook his head. We'd be asking to get caught. Better that we're delayed than we fall into Dird's hands.
And whatever it is that's hunting us?
I can't feel it now, he said. I've been trying for more than an hour, but I get no sense of its presence anywhere in the Force.
Meaning what? Said Anakin, unconvinced. It's lost us? It's given up?
Possibly.
Obi-Wan, that's a big gamble. What if you're wrong? What if waiting here gives it a chance to find us?
He'd been asking himself the same difficult question for the past half hour.
You're right. It's a risk. But I still believe not waiting for the convoy is the greater danger.
I'm not saying you don't have a point, Anakin said, shoving his hands into his pockets. It's just... it means being stuck here for another day, Obi-Wan, and that gives Dird more time to launch his first attack.
He pushed to his feet, feeling his muscles drag subtly, reminding him that he was far from his best.
For all we know, he's launched it already. Our escape could easily have panicked him into making a move. But we don't know for certain, and we can't let our fears panic us into a bad choice.
Anakin considered him.
Are you saying you were feeling panicked last night?
I'm saying that important decisions should be made in a calm state of mind, he retorted. Raging theta storms, failing power grids, and exploding refineries are not, in my estimation, conducive to tranquility.
No kidding, said Anakin, dryly amused. Then he shook his head.
I guess it all comes down to timing. Maybe it doesn't matter if we're here another day.
If the Republic can get a battle group together fast enough, launch an all-out assault on Lantib.
We can hope for that, certainly, he said carefully. But Anakin...
Yeah, said Anakin, scowling again. Since we never made real-time voice contact with the Temple, there's no way of knowing if they even got our message. In which case, Obi-Wan, don't you think we should...
What I think, he said, slipping his lightsaber back into his shirt's shielded pocket, is that we can't go anywhere until the storm shield's down. So I'm going to look in at the sick house, then swallow some breakfast. What about you?
I've said I'll help sift through what's left of the refinery, said Anakin after a moment. He still wasn't convinced.
See if I can repair any equipment the blast didn't destroy.
Ricard won't give up on the idea they can make that quota. He's going back down the mine and taking as many villagers as he can with him. I've told him he's crazy, but he won't listen.
Of course he wouldn't. Ricard was driven by duty and desperation.
He's trying to save his village, Anakin. You can't blame him for that.
I don't, said Anakin. He sounded unbearably sad.
But it's a fool's errand, and he knows it. From the minute that storm closed in, these people never stood a chance.
If it wasn't for you, these people would all be dead and dying now.
How are you feeling this morning?
Anakin dragged his fingers through his dirty hair. The light filtering through the storm shield glinted on faintly golden stubble, picking out bruised shadows beneath his eyes and in the subtle hollows of his cheeks.
I've been better, he said, shrugging.
And worse.
You?
I have a headache, Obi-Wan admitted, which meditation hasn't banished. Also a nasty aftertaste in the back of my throat.
So do I, Anakin said slowly.
You don't think...
I think we've been breathing toxic smoke for hours, he retorted.
But I doubt we're going to drop dead from Damatite poisoning. We're Jedi, we can ameliorate the worst of the smoke's effects... But still, be careful poking around that refinery. No heroics. Be sure to wear protective clothing.
Says the man who diced with death in an unstable power plant, said Anakin.
Devi told me all about it, Obi-Wan. You're lucky you didn't go up in a ball of burning plasma.
Lucky? He pretended offense. Luck had nothing to do with it. Now, off you go. I'll join you as soon as I can.
Many of Torbell's women and children still mingled on the square outside, eating and gossiping and gaining strength from community.
A few men stood with them, but it seemed most had already returned to the mine with Ricard, or were sorting through what was left of the refinery. Obi-Wan looked for Gretty, but couldn't see her. He saw Teba Jacklin, though, standing with Sufi and Branda. They didn't notice him, paused on the charterhouse step, welcoming the daylight on his face. And that was fine. They'd only bombard him with questions he wasn't feeling up to answering yet. He made his way to the sick house and found Gretty there, silent and hopeful, by her sleeping mother's side. She was the only one in the room who was not a patient. Seeing him, she stood, fingers twisting in her fraying, patched tunic.
Teb Kenobi!
Obi-Wan, he said, joining her. How are you, Gretty? How's your mother? Gretty stepped aside.
You tell that to me.
He dropped to a crouch beside the cot and laid his palm against Boli's thin face. Her color was better, her breathing too, and he could barely feel any pain inside her. Gently, he inspected her injured hand. The wound looked clean, as did her arm. She didn't stir at his touch.
Teba Sufi's given her brew to keep her sleeping, said Gretty. She says folk get better right fast if they're let sleep without care.
Just as gently, Obi-Wan laid Boli's arm back to the blanket. That's very true, he smiled. Your mother's going to be fine, Gretty. You don't have to worry anymore. The child's chin lifted. In her eyes, there were questions and courage, and hope touched with fear.
I did some of it, didn't I? I helped make her better. How did I do that?
He could lie. He should lie. This little girl didn't need to know she could have been a Jedi, possibly a great one, and likely would have been if life weren't so unfair.
Teeb? Obi-Wan? She persisted. Did you do something to me?
No, he said quickly. No, I promise. All I did was show your mind how it could think in a different way. Gretty's fingers twisted in her tunic again.
I felt strange, she whispered. Warm and strong. I felt like I wasn't inside my own skin, like I was on the outside watching.
And did that frighten you? She hesitated, then nodded.
Yes.
And then she shook her head.
But no, I mean, I liked it. I want to do it again.
And maybe one day you will, he said after a moment. Who can tell?
You're a Jedi, she said. Can't you?
He let her see how sorry he was. She deserved so much better than this poor village on Lanteeb. I wish I could, Gretty. She went very still, and her eyes filled with shadows. Then she nodded.
You'd best look in on Arad, Teeb. His father was here before. He sat with him all night, but he's back down the mine now.
Her face twisted.
I hate the mine.
I'm sure you do, Gretty, he said, aching, and did as he was told. Teba Sufi returned while he was checking Arad's progress.
I saw you come in here, Teeb Kenobi. Think you can't trust me with your handiwork?
There was a teasing note in her voice that belied the sharp words. Obi-Wan looked up from Arad's splinted arms. He seems well enough. Has he spoken yet?
Opened his eyes a few minutes, she replied. He knew his name, knew his father. That's enough to be going on with.
Nodding, he glanced at the other cots. I see you have three fewer patients, Teba.
On their feet and gone home, yes, she said, well satisfied. Not dead, which is a mercy. And these five I'll keep asleep another day, and then they'll be shifting too.
Moving close enough to take his chin in her fingers and tilt his face up, she pursed her lips.
Headache's bothering you, is it? Mouth tastes like foul splodge.
He blinked. I'm fine, Teba.
Ha!
She let go of his chin and stepped back, scornful.
Like to think anyone who's not you is a fool, is that it? I'd heard Jedi were haughty.
Haughty, he thought, then said, Teba Sufi.
Born and raised in Damatite country, and you think I can't see a man touched green?
She glared.
If that's not haughty, you tell me what is. Sit where you are.
So he sat, feeling like a scolded youngling, and watched Teba Sufi rummage in the supply cupboard and return to him with a stoppered bottle and a measuring cup.
You're going to feel worse before you feel better, Teeb,
she said bluntly, pouring a measure of thick brownish liquid into the cup.
And you won't be the only one.
The toxic smoke, he said, feeling his nerves tighten. How bad will it get?
Hard to say,
she said.
Your belly's empty?
He took the measuring cup she held out to him. I haven't eaten yet, no.
Good. It'll work faster that way.
Teeba. Suddenly her forthright gaze was elusive. Sufi, how bad will it get? She looked at Gretty, holding her mother's hand and pretending not to listen to them.
Bad enough. I'll not pretend. I'm worried. For the children most. That storm.
Her plain face pinched with fear.
We've all breathed too much smoke, Teeb. Trapped inside our storm shield with it for hours? That's never happened before.
With a deep breath, she calmed herself.
Drink your mix, Teeb, and you'll need to send your young friend to me for his dose, sooner not later.
Sourly, he eyed the viscous concoction. Does it taste as bad as it looks?
Worse, she said, with a swift, grim smile. But you'll thank me.
Since he had no choice, he swallowed the disgusting liquid, coughed and spluttered as it burned its slow way down to his protesting belly. Eyes streaming, he stared at Teeba Sufi.
Thank you. Oh, I doubt it, he wheezed. What is in that appalling stuff?
This and that, said Sufi. Now, you'll need more purging than one dose, Teeb Kenobi. The smoke soaked you, it has. Jedi or not, you'll feel it a while. And Torbell's children will feel it. We need the storm shield down and good fresh air in our lungs, she frowned. And I'll need to brew more purgative. I only hope I've enough fixings. I never thought to be dosing the old village.
Nauseous, Obi-Wan pushed up from the cot side stool and gave sleeping Arad a last look. He could feel no danger to Rickard's son. The healing he'd managed for him had taken. All the young man needed now was rest and time. He was aware of a brief, silent pleasure. He'd have to remember to thank Vokara Che. All her lectures had finally paid off. If you need help with your brewing, Teeba, you must ask, he said. Anakin and I will be leaving Tor Bell in a day or so, but until then, whatever we can do to help. She looked him up and down.
Never thought in all my life to meet me a Jedi. Not a toe I've stepped off Lanteep. Never wanted to, never will. But even we hear things. Or we did.
She rested her hand on his arm.
You're not what we are told. Or not all that we are told.
Smiling, he handed her his emptied medicine cup. Is anyone, Teeba Sufi? Leaving her to stare after him, he took himself outside to the village square, where Jacqueline and some other women were tidying up the remains of the community breakfast, while a few of the children kicked their Synthify ball around. Jacqueline saw him and beckoned him over.
You've not eaten,
she said accusingly, and handed him a plate with bread and egg and meat on it.
It's cold now, I can't help that. Eat, and then there's tea in a pot. I'll pour it when you're ready.
His belly still churned from his dose of purgative, but he needed the nourishment. Staring at the hazily swirling storm shield, at the bluish sky beyond it, and the drab surrounding landscape, he ate the cold food.
The storm's almost past, said Jacqueline,
content it seemed to hold her cleaning cloth, and let the other women carry on alone for a moment.
We should be breathing fresh air soon.
Obi-Wan glanced at her. You've spoken to Teeba Sufi?
Yes, I know the dangers, Jacqueline said, curt. We'll ride them, Teeb Kenobi. That's what life in Tor Bell is. Problem after problem and us riding them. Trying not to fall off and be trampled underfoot.
Her pain was a blood-red surge in the Force.
I wish there was something I could do about that, Jacqueline.
She turned on him fiercely.
Tor Bell's not yours to fix. Tor Bell's ours and we'll take care of it. You do what you came here to do, you and that young man. They're making us murderers, and I won't have it, do you hear?
He couldn't eat any more. Putting his half-emptied plate on a nearby trestle, he nodded. I hear, Teeba. Anakin and I will do our best. He looked around. Am I needed here? If not, I'll see if there's anything more to be done in the power plant.
If Devi has no need of you,
said Jacqueline. I know we've men trying to get the artesian pump back working. That power surge did some fearful damage.
He stared.
The village is without water? There's water in the holding tanks, she said. Enough to last till the pump's fixed.
Then she sighed.
It'll likely need parts. That'll mean sending to the city and spending money we can't spare. And with this damatite shipment short...
Shoulders slumping, Jacqueline turned away.
I should be telling Ricard to stop mining. How can we send them our damatite when...
A shuddering breath.
But that damatite means food in our children's bellies.
There were no simple answers. Nothing about this was fair or easy.
Send them your damatite, Jacqueline, he said. Whatever they take this time will never be used to harm anyone.
She turned back to him, her eyes terrible.
You can promise me that, Jedi.
I can, he said, so confident, and had no idea if it was the truth or not. The Force couldn't or wouldn't tell him. But she needed to believe it. You know where I'll be, and Anakin's helping at the refinery. If you need either one of us, don't hesitate. Thank you for breakfast. Leaving Jacqueline to finish her tasks, Obi-Wan made his way to the power plant. Devi's face lit up seeing him.
You!
She said, crossing the monitor station to meet him halfway.
A Jedi Teeb, Obi-Wan.
She was smiling and teasing, but beneath that she was in pain. The servo motors of her anti-grav harness were grinding more harshly than ever after her overnight exertions.
I came to see if you needed my assistance, he said. Though it does seem as though you have everything under control.
I do, thanks to Anakin, she said. I've never seen anyone work with machinery the way he does. No offense intended. You were a great help too last night. Only...
Believe me, there's no need to apologize or explain, he said quickly. Compared with my young friend, I'm little more than a rank amateur.
Tell me, Devi, how close are you to lowering the storm shield?
Devi glanced at the bank of monitors she'd been checking.
Theta levels are near to safe now. Won't be too long. Doesn't do to be overeager, you know. After everything we've survived, Obi-Wan, I'd hate to see us taken down by a last few stubborn particles of Theta radiation.
And so would he.
Then, while we wait, might I take a closer look at your harness? I might not be Anakin, but there should be something I can do to make it work more efficiently.
Devi hesitated, then nodded.
Yes, thank you. I do my best with it, but...
She shrugged.
The only manual I've got is years out of date. There's a toolbox under that bank of monitors there.
He fetched the toolbox, then eased her out of the awkward and misaligned contraption, helping her to sit on the floor. But instead of turning his attention to the equipment, he took her hand in his and cradled his other hand to the back of her head.
What are you doing? She said, startled.
Sufi's foul concoction had eased his headache considerably. He could feel the Force more clearly, sense where Devi was hurting and how he could help.
I'd like to make you a little more comfortable, he said. Do I have your permission? Yes, I suppose so, she said, then laughed, sounding nervous. How could you?
Jedi feel things.
Like other people's pain? Oh, I didn't know that.
He tightened his fingers around hers.
There's no need to be afraid. I've been healed a few times myself. It's quite a simple thing, really.
Maybe for you, said Devi. I know you helped Boli and Arad.
I'd be grateful if you could help me.
Sometimes... Her breath caught.
I don't like to complain. It doesn't change anything. Only sometimes...
I know, he said gently. Sometimes it feels as though you'll never feel anything else. As though the rest of your life will feel like this.
Yes,
she whispered.
I can't afford medicine from Lantiba. Sufi does what she can with her herbs, but...
She smeared a hand across her eyes.
I don't suppose... Is there any chance you could...
Regret cut keenly like a blade.
I'm so sorry, Devi. I'm not a dedicated healer. Besides, the original injury happened some time ago, didn't it? Even if I were trained, I'm not certain it could be fixed.
She closed her eyes.
I see.
But I will make you more comfortable, he promised. Now,
Breathe slowly and deeply for me. Yes, that's it. It was a relief to help her, to sink himself into the Force and use it in such a good cause. Knowing that countless innocents would suffer and die if he and Anakin failed to stop Lock Durd and Count Dooku, this one small act, this brief, transitory kindness, took on a grave and greatly personal significance. In healing Gretti's mother and Ricard's son, in easing this courageous woman's pain, he was making a difference. Anything he could do to leave these people better than he found them was a balm to his weary, fretful mind. When he was finished, and Devi's pain was near to banished, he left her to stir awake and turned his attention to the anti-grav harness. It was indeed a sorry piece of equipment, broken and mended and tricked up and falling apart. He'd do what he could, but doubtless Anakin could do better. He'd ask him to look at it before they returned to the city. Feeling eyes on him, he glanced up. Devi was smiling.
I don't hurt,
she said, wondering.
I can't remember the last time that something, somewhere, didn't hurt. Obi-Wan.
You're very welcome, he said. Now, let's see if I can make a difference to this harness, shall we? His repair job wasn't perfect, not by a long shot, but there was a definite improvement. Once he'd finished and helped Devi strap herself back into it, she threw her arms around him and held on tight.
Thank you. I don't know why you're here on Lanteeb, and I don't care. I don't care what anyone has to say about the Jedi. Thank you.
And then she let go and practically danced to the monitors. After checking the theta level readout, she pumped her fist in the air.
Yes! We can lower the shield.
Grinning, she turned to him.
Would you like to do the honors?
She pointed.
It's that panel there. The red toggles to lower the shield and the green switch to sound the all clear.
And so, with great solemnity, he deactivated the storm shield that had kept them alive through the long, wild night.
Come on, said Devi, heading for the door. Let's go breathe some fresh air, shall we?
The all-clear siren sounded through the village, a lighter, more cheerful wailing than the strident blaring of danger. Emerging into the unfiltered sunshine, Obi-Wan saw that he and Devi weren't the only people rushing outside to celebrate. Everyone above ground that he could see had downed tools, was hugging and laughing as the trapped smoke from the burned refinery began to dissipate, shredded by a lively breeze. He felt a familiar shiver in the Force. Yes, there was Anakin, over at the ruined building, his height and his light hair making him stand out in the crowd. Anakin, sensing him in turn, raised a hand above his head and waved. He waved back, an unexpected rush of optimism lifting his dull, beleaguered spirits.
Perhaps we can win this one after all.
And then somebody shouted,
Look! Droids!
Freezing apprehension swamped him. By his side, Devi shifted around, staring.
What's Taiki on about? Is the convoy here early? Ricard's going to explode.
Obi-Wan saw sunlight on Durasteel, wickedly glinting, heard a faint thud, thud, thud of heavy metal feet on hard, dry ground. Then came a high, buzzing drone, a familiar metallic whining, and a swarm of mosquito droids flowed over a rise and began to spit blaster bolts at the unprotected village. A villager screamed and fell, and abruptly stopped screaming. Obi-Wan spun around, sending a frantic mental call to Anakin.
They found us. Get everyone inside.
Without waiting for an answer, he sprinted to the power plant. Reaching it, he threw himself inside, leapt for the storm shield monitor, and slammed the switches on again. He had no idea how long it took for the generators to engage, if the shield could repel blaster bolts, or how long it would hold out against a concerted attack. The only thing he did know was that the shield might be their only hope.
They were waiting for us. It was always too late.
Obi-Wan! Obi-Wan! What's going on? What are you...
He turned. It's not the convoy, Devi. Stay in here. Do not go outside. Divert all the power you can to the shields and contact Ricard in the mine. Tell him to keep everyone underground. Right now it's the safest place to be. Shocked, her eyes wide, Devi moved into position. He could feel her terror like a living thing.
Cutting himself off from it, he reached inside his shirt, pulled out his lightsaber, and flicked its switch. The burning blue blade hummed into life. She gasped.
You're going to fight them?
Yes, he said, moving for the door. All the power you can spare, Devi. Nothing else matters. Outside again, he looked up, counted 10, 12, 16 mosquito droids. Looking around, he saw more dead or wounded villagers and closed his mind to their plight. Anakin, still shouting at people to run, was drawing the droids' fire and deflecting their lethal blaster bolts with his own lightsaber, its blade a blur. The storm shield still hadn't engaged, and there were more droids coming, dazzling bright in the sunshine. Dirt had sent an army after them. Battle droids, ranks of them. They were close enough to count. How could I have been so wrong? How did I not sense this? These people. These poor people. Obi-Wan! He leapt into the fray, putting himself between the last straggling villagers and a hunting pack of droids, and took out three of them in swift succession, even as he fought his way to Anakin. Where's the shield? Anakin shouted above the searing shriek of the droid attack. You turned it on, right? No, Anakin, I disabled it, he shouted back as he destroyed another mosquito. Of course I turned it on. Then why hasn't it... With a humming rush of power, the storm shield re-engaged, but not fast enough to prevent the first marching battle droids from entering the village. Obi-Wan! He almost never got angry, but now he felt sick with fury. You fool, Kenobi. You arrogant fool, he thought, then shouted, I know, I've got them, Anakin. You take care of these mosquitoes. And without giving Anakin a chance to argue, he sprinted to the road leading out of the village, where the battle droids were marching toward him in perfect lockstep. How many? 20? Maybe more. They saw him and aimed their blasters. Running headlong to meet them, he raised his lightsaber, raised his other hand ready to force push.
Hold your fire. Hold your fire,
the droid commander blared.
Target acquired. Capture, not kill.
What? But before he could consider the implications of the order, the droids were flipping switches on their blasters, and the next thing he knew, they were firing stun charges at him. Still running, he summoned the Force and vaulted over their heads. Their blasters tracked him, firing without pause. One stun charge clipped his shoulder in passing. Dizzy, his vision crimson around the edges, he hit the ground and stumbled. Spinning around, off kilter, he force-pushed the droids nearest to him. They flew backward, stun charges harmlessly stitching the air. Three of them collected another four as they tumbled. Good. Still dizzy, he tried for another force push. Not as effective this time, only two droids went flying. And the other droids were swiftly closing in, starting to flank him, surround him. He shook his head hard, trying to clear it. The Damatite headache was back, fiercer than ever. Or maybe that was the stun charge. He was going to be sick.
Obi-Wan, break left!
Careful!
Obi-Wan managed to croak as he staggered in more or less the right direction.
Stun charges! They want to take us alive!
I know! Anakin shouted and passed him at a run. And then he thought perhaps he really was unconscious and having a wild dream, because Anakin threw his lightsaber, sent it spinning into the midst of the droids, dismembering them into scrap metal, using the Force to control his weapon's speed and trajectory. Swaying like a drunk in Coruscant's seediest nightclub, he watched Anakin obliterate the remaining battle droids. If he hadn't felt so ill, he'd have laughed or cheered.
Good boy. Oh, good boy. You show the Bobs.
With effortless, arrogant ease, Anakin summoned his lightsaber back to his hand, nodded once at the destroyed droids, grimly satisfied, then turned.
You all right?
He couldn't answer, not only because he was still shaking from the stun charge's nimbus, but because...
Hey!
Anakin said sharply.
Obi-Wan, this isn't your fault. They didn't teleport here from Lantiba. They must have been traveling for hours. They left the city sometime after we were trapped here by the Theta Storm. We were never going to get away. You know that, right?
Slowly, the worst of the nausea subsided. Standing a little straighter, he deactivated his lightsaber.
Perhaps... But that's hardly a consolation for these people. They took us in, and look what their act of mercy has brought them.
Anakin was staring down the road that led out of the village. On the other side of the storm shield, gently distorted by the shimmering plasma, more battle droids and mosquitoes gathered. Frowning, Anakin summoned one of the dismembered droid's blasters to his hand, switched it back to lethal mode, then aimed it at the storm shield and fired.
The blaster bolt splashed against it. Energy dissipated. The shield shivered, but held. "Well," said Anakin, and tossed the blaster aside. "That's one question answered." Obi-Wan rubbed his temple, fighting to control the vicious pain.